With the tourist season in full swing, Prague is swarming with visitors admiring its historical sites and monuments. But the city has more to offer than just its culture and history. The Academia Publishing House recently released a rather unusual guidebook of the capital. Entitled Divoká příroda Prahy, or The Wild Nature of Prague, it offers a completely different perspective on the city, as seen through the eyes of two passionate naturalists. When I met with one of the guidebook's authors, Radek Mikuláš, I first asked him to define the term wild nature.
It's a nature that develops spontaneously, without human intentions. It can happen on mountains, it can happen on rocks, but it can also happen in the city. And it happens much more often than usual people presume.
You are a geologist by profession. What led you to write this unusual guide?
During my geological research on walks in Prague, just for refreshing, I found a lot of plants and a lot of fascinating pieces of nature, and I wanted to understand that. I asked my colleagues botanists for such a book, and they told me that nothing like it exists. There are essays, there are some scientific papers on it, but there is nothing for usual people who live in such nature. So I began to pursue Jiří Sádlo, who is a renowned botanist, to write that book. But Jiří Sádlo didn't agree, and he contacted me with Jan Albert Šturma as a possible co-author. But Albert was not willing to write the whole book. So finally, I agreed to learn something more about the plants in the city and to join as a co-author of texts and also author of all the photos which are in the book, because Albert, the co-author, didn't make so much photos, but he has perfect drawings.
And the drawings are also included in the book, a few of them.
Yes.
What is the aim of your guide? What's the main purpose of the book?
Well, to show the people who noticed this nature in the city, to give them an explanation. What do they see and what's the perspective of that, and whether there are some rare species or whether it's all common, whether they came from different continents or how did they spread on train lines. It's a common way of spreading of neophytes, of new vegetation, and so on. So either to explain or just to show the nature to people who don't pay attention to that.
At the beginning of your book, there is a small map with the most interesting points worth seeing, and then they are described in greater details in individual chapters. How did you classify the different types of landscapes or wild landscapes in Prague?
Well, first there is a map where some 50 places are put, and they are briefly described. And then some 20 of these places are described in a form of, say, personal talk or personal experience of either me or Albert or both of us, if we were all together on the place. And the classification is given to some extent by the order of the chapters. Each chapter describes some specific settings, let us say Prague underground, it means canals or artificial caves or old mines and so on, which exist in Prague and still are inhabited by bats, let us say. So this is one of the level of classification. At the end of the book, there is also about 50 specific vegetation types. For example, there are savanna growth with bush grass, Calamagrostis epigeus, and staghorn sumac, Rus typhina. So these two plants make the base of the community. And there are also examples of, say, minor size. On pavement margins, there is a common purslane, also known as pigweed, which is eatable. I didn't try, but my co-author did and survived.
That's great to know. So in times of hunger, we know that there are edible...
It's a big benefit of the book, I guess. After the future collapse, it will be useful.
Actually, the very first chapter is written by you, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Wandering Through Prague's Primeval Forests. Are there really any remains of primeval forests in the Czech capital?
Well, there is no really primeval forest in Prague, but there is something which can easily be called a primary forest. Primeval forests usually are understood to continue from medieval and even older times of the human history. They should be untouched by human activity, human management. But in Prague, some forests develop spontaneously on the ruins of the city, on a place where the human intentions were lost. Ruins or abandoned parks or abandoned gardens. There are many possibilities. And once again, these places were covered by vegetation from zero, factually. And then this vegetation developed to a forest growth. So this is the primeval forest of Prague.
Talking about forests, one of the Prague forests that you mention is called Milichovský High, but that has a slightly different history because, if I'm not mistaken, that was sort of artificially made when they were building one of Prague's biggest housing estates, Jižní Město, and they brought those mounds that were dug out, and on those artificial mounds they planted the forest.
You explained it more or less well. In the beginning of 1990s, it was concluded to make a so-called forestry restorations in this official language. But in practice, it meant that each bush or tree, which was superfluous in garden center, was probably taken and planted out on the dump in thousands of seedlings. And there are rare and nice and expensive varieties aside the most common ones, together with species which come from the surrounding settings. And nearly everything survives and is flourishing. It's a miracle, because if you make such a great collection of species on your garden, it would be probably pretty difficult to keep it. But there is no care in the Milichov dump, but still everything is vital and flourishing.
What's your explanation?
It's a good question and difficult one. Probably the combinations are so much unusual in comparison with normal nature that there is not so much competition.
You also authored another chapter called Prague, a Salt Lake City. What part of the city reminded you of that place?
10 years ago, I saw this great salt lake in Utah. And after that, some years, I found the water reservoir in Praha Hostivář, which is several kilometers long. And then it was emptied and desiccated. And on the bottom, there were deep cracks in the mud and thin salt crusts. So it is the similarity with the Great Salt Lake. And there was a strange mixture of plants with salt-preferring species. We found carcasses of large fish, Asian grass carp, about 1 meter long. And we found also shells of a tropical red-eared turtle, which doesn't appear normally in the nature of the Czech Republic, but probably terrarists or aquarists are unhappy because these animals eat a lot and they grow a lot, so they probably gave them freedom in the reservoir.
And then they actually survive in...
Survived many years, probably, and the last information I got is that they even were able to breed. So it might be a great danger for fish because they eat fish eggs and they eat small, just breeded fish. So we will see.
You also mention places which are right in the center of Prague, such as Uhelný trh or Karlovo náměstí. What kind of imprints of wild nature can be found there?
It's chiefly a topic of my co-author. But Albert considers the paving of the Uhelný trh square, which is in the historic city center, to be continuously vegetated with disturbances, of course, but with the continuity for hundreds of years. Plants resistant to trampling, like thyme leaf, sandwort, can survive. There is a market, so there has always been a source of nutrients for plants and a lot of people as well.
At the end of your book, there are several supplements, and one of them is this chapter called Prague Nature as Seen from Trams. In this respect, what is actually your favorite tram line?
Probably number 17. It's a tram line that goes from the southern part of Prague in Modřany, then it crosses the city center and ends at Ládví, which is the northern margin of Prague. And these parts, like former fields in Modřany or old limestone quarries at Bráník, are places I know from my childhood. Then the tram crosses the center riverbank of the Vltava, and finally, at the north part of the city, the tram crosses steep slopes with remnants of maybe 80 years old colonial houses in Troja and Kobylisi. So it's not only botanic remnant of something old, but it's a social remnant.
What I like about your guide is that besides giving sort of detailed description of the different locations that you describe, it's also very poetic, and the individual chapters are divided by koans, by short stories or statements which are used in Zen practice. Who is the author of these koans? Who had this idea?
The koans were written by Albert Sturma before we started to work on the guidebook. It was one of the texts he gave me just to incorporate somehow to the material we have. The koan, as one text, it's not a description of botany, it's a description of emotions which a perceptive person can have face-to-face with bushes or plants of the city. So finally, I divided the text into a dozen shorter texts that divide the main chapters now.
Finally, as you point out at the beginning of your book, wilderness is in nature something that's sort of changing. And I wonder whether all the places that you have described in the book are actually still there, because, as you said, it's something that keeps changing and dying out and then appearing somewhere else.
Well, some places we described have already disappeared. An old factory in Štěrbohoře was broken and replaced by living houses now. Or the water reservoir with turtles was filled again with water. But on the other hand, as quickly the wild nature of the city disappears, it reappears on different place again.